It was mid-July 2014, and Major General Greg Martin was arriving at the Pentagon for a meeting with his boss, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. After more than three decades in the Army, General Martin had been serving as the president of the National Defense University. General Martin's job performance had been rated exemplary over the years, and he was expecting some good news.
I got a call on a Friday afternoon that said, report to the chairman's office Monday morning at 10. And so I thought, oh, maybe I'm going to get promoted. They're going to put the NDU president back to three stars.
General Martin had served under the man he was meeting with, General Dempsey, a number of times.
He is a fantastic person, leader. He had been my boss four different times and love him, and he's an awesome guy.
But when he arrived, something was different.
Basically, I walk in the office and the first person I saw was the lawyer. And I said, okay, no promotion today, you know, because that's not a good sign when the lawyer's there. And so General Dempsey walked across the office and he gave me a big hug and he said, Greg, I love you like a brother. You've done an amazing job. Nobody could have done what you did in just 2 years. But you have until 1700 today to resign or I will fire you. Fire you. Fire you. Fire you. And I'm giving you an order to go get a psychiatric evaluation at Walter Reed this week.
Over the last few years, General Martin had been displaying all sorts of manic behavior, ranging from doing keg stands at parties to quickly losing his temper with his coworkers.
I had unknowingly been living with bipolar disorder, which is a serious mental illness, from at least 2003 on. So 2014, I went into full-blown mania, essentially a state of insanity where I was out of control, over the top. People said, there's something wrong with General Martin. There's something seriously wrong with him. So General Dempsey, who was my boss, he took all this in. You know, he didn't know what was wrong with me, but he knew he had to get me out of there.
General Martin, triggered by his bipolar disorder, was initially elated by this news. But within 18 months, he found himself locked in a VA psychiatric hospital, going from, in his own words, hero to zero. But after hitting that low, General Martin slowly recovered, receiving the proper attention and care he needed. Today, he's thriving and has just released a book about his experiences entitled The Bipolar General, My Forever War with Mental Illness. And he still views his forced resignation as a key turning point in his life.
His decision to remove me from command was absolutely the right thing to do. It probably saved my life, my marriage, and my family, because I was in a very bad spot.
In today's episode, our hosts sit down with General Martin to discuss his journey with mental health, how his bipolar disorder was triggered in Iraq, and how family was probably the biggest factor in his recovery. I'm Carrie Varoufakis, and this is Army Matters.
General Dynamics Land Systems is innovating command on the move with its next generation Stryker X. Currently in testing, the Stryker X is designed to serve as the Army's mobile command post on the battlefield of the future. Stryker X, taking command.
Hello, everyone. I'm Lieutenant General Retired Leslie Smith, and I'm here with my good friend.
SMA Retired Dan Daly, and we're your co-hosts for Army Matters.
Dan, good to see you, man. Even if you are right down the street, right down the hall.
Yeah, I wish people could actually see our studio. But it's not what people think. They think we're all in the same room together.
Yeah.
We're not.
Yeah, we've done this in different states.
You know where we are, though? We're in the cloud.
Yes.
The cyber cloud.
Right.
So, Les, we got a great guest today. And you know him very well. You've actually worked with him in the past and had interactions with him. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Greg Martin was my boss when I was a one-star general. So, you know, BG, Brigadier General, stands for Baby General.
Baby General.
So you're learning how to wear the rank. You're learning how to interact with others.
There's a term for that. It's called generalship, isn't it?
Generalship. Yeah.
Generalship.
I'll leave that alone. That's another day, another podcast. But yeah, Greg Martin was my second commanding general. He was a great boss. Very interesting dynamic. With some of the things that we're going to talk about today, now we realize what was really going on. And now I wish I would have known some of those things so we would have been able to help a little bit more.
We're going to talk about something that most people don't want to talk about.
That's right.
And we're going to talk all about it.
Yeah.
Why don't you welcome him, Les?
Hey, General Greg Martin. Welcome to Army Matters, brother. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Les. It's really a great honor and a privilege to be on with you and SMA today.
So we just got to go ahead and get this out there. Who was your best one-star general when you were a two-star commander?
Oh, my God.
Go ahead. Tell everybody.
Hands down, General Leslie Smith.
Yes. Thank you very much. We just want to get that on the record.
There might have been a financial exchange
there. No, there's no financial exchange. I didn't have any money then, man. Come on. You know, generals, we do okay, but not that great.
Sir, we do broadcast this publicly, so there should be some type of disclaimer.
Okay, it's not a disclaimer, because it's true. When it's true, it's true. But let's get into the
podcast. All right, let's get into it.
Can we do that?
Let's talk to our guest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Greg, before we start, I just need to confirm. You're not only a two-star general, but also a PhD. Did I get that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so we call him, he's Major General Dr. Greg Martin. Is it Dr. Major General? I don't know.
Oh, I remember when he was on active duty. I was very intimidated by his,
his
level of intelligence and qualification. Fully qualified.
Yes.
Fully qualified.
So, Greg, let's begin at the start of your Army career. Where are you from and what led you to join the Army?
So I grew up in a town called Holbrook, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, kind of a blue-collar, ethnic, Irish, Italian town. I had a military tradition in my family. My dad was a World War II vet. All my uncles were military veterans. So it was just kind of a given that I was going to go in the service somehow, some way, you know, whether it was enlisted, officer, what have you. But my parents really pushed me towards a college education and you know, combine it with military training and be an officer. So they were really responsible for pushing me in that direction.
Okay.
When I started looking at colleges and universities, the service academies really looked like the best alternative. And so I ended up going to college for 1 year, and then I ended up applying and getting accepted at West Point. And I looked into it and said, okay, this is where I want to go.
But you didn't have an easy time at West Point. Did you almost drop out?
So when I went to West Point, frankly, I thought the leadership there was immature, tyrannical, didn't make sense. Plus, I didn't think the physical training was hard enough. I was in unbelievable physical condition, had amazing energy and drive. I could run 10 miles in less than an hour, could do 100 push-ups, 25 pull-ups. So when I went to West Point, they were really moving at a slow pace to bring everybody up to speed. So I was very disillusioned. And so I said, hey, this is a waste of my time. I'm not being challenged. I think it's really stupid. I'm out of here. And so all the guys who wanted to leave or resign, they put you in a special barracks. And then they basically, they sort of dragged it out so that they tortured you and made you second guess your decision to leave. And so then you also had to call your parents. So I called home and my dad's like, hey, Greg, that's fine. Come on home. I really miss having you around. And so my dad was really just a softy and a good guy and fun to be with, great sense of humor. My mother gets on and she's like, Oh, sorry, I just broke the line. Sorry. She's like, whoa, something. And that is crazy. You can't just quit. You haven't even given the place a fair chance yet. You get your rear end back in there. So I went back in and I thought, if I go home, I mean, it'd be great hanging out with Dad, but my mother would be a nightmare. She would be brutal. I said, I can't go. So I told the major who was in charge of all the people who wanted to resign. I said, hey, it worked. You guys changed my mind. You know, I do not want to go home and have to deal with my mom. And so I went back into the new cadet training, back into Beast Barracks is what they called it. And essentially, I said, I am just going to do the very best I can every minute of every day. I'm going to be the best teammate anybody ever had. And so then, once I did that attitude adjustment, I won the award for best new cadet in my platoon for the rest of the summer. And then I never looked back. The next 4 years, I just really kind of breezed through academically, leadership, athletically, had a great time, and even managed to have a good social life because there's a lot of all-girls schools in the region.
Oh, wow. Maybe that's another story. Is that how you met your wife?
No, I didn't meet her till about a year after I graduated from West Point. I was a second lieutenant in Germany, and she was living in the same town because her dad was an Army guy. So we met on a blind date.
Nice. And the rest is history. That's yes. Another podcast for another time.
Right.
Sir, one of the things you talked about was the effort you made to avoid being called a wimpy intellectual. Tell us what that's all about.
So when I went to grad school at MIT, you know,
say that again. You went to grad school where?
At MIT.
Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Yes, sir.
That means you got to be pretty smart. Dan, did you go to MIT?
I did not.
Neither did I. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, Greg.
You know, there's different schools of thought in the Army. There's a school of thought that thinks, you know, getting civilian graduate schooling and the most education you can get is a wonderful thing because it makes you a broader, more, a better thinking senior officer. And it's, you know, guys like General Dempsey, General Petraeus, General Bostick, and others really epitomize that. And going back, I think Colin Powell, George Marshall, Dwight Eisenhower, MacArthur really embodied that as well. But there's another kind of school of thought that says, you know, that time that you went to MIT or to grad school, that was a waste of time because you could have gone and been an OC at the National Training Center or JRTC, or you might have been able to get another muddy boots assignment, and you'd better hone and develop your tactical warfighting skills. And I ended up just sort of working for a bunch of guys who were good leaders, they were good commanders, and they were very much the muddy boot school of thought. And so I knew when I show up, you know, I'm going to run into these guys who are real nail biters, and they're going to be like, you know, what have you done to improve your warfighting skills the last couple of years? You know, you've got these fancy degrees, you know, Dr. Martin, but show me something that will impress me. And so I figured it's going to take a little bit of time to show them that I'm a good warfighter, but I can show them right away that I can kick their butts in physical training, in PT. And so the minute I showed up as a major at Fort Lewis, Washington, I mean, I just destroyed everybody in running, calisthenics, push-up contests, PT tests, obstacle courses. And I mean, really, there was nobody who was close to me. And so what that did is it gave me immediate, instant credibility. So that's kind of how PT really came in for me after grad school.
Okay.
Sir, can you tell us how your experience in Iraq kickstarted your bipolarism?
So in order to have an onset of bipolar disorder, you have to have the genetic predisposition or the bipolar gene, which I had unknowingly. And then it takes a triggering event, which is something that's very stressful, pressure-packed, euphoric, thrilling, could be any number of things that cause the bipolar gene to be triggered. For me, it was the war in Iraq. And so it was a combination of, you know, months of incredibly intense preparation, training, administration, medical work, all the stuff that we had to do. And then the deployment from Germany to Kuwait, then months of training in Kuwait to get ready for the attack, and then the attack itself. I'll tell you, when we attacked from Kuwait into Iraq, I felt like Superman. I mean, like the weight of the world had been lifted off my shoulder. I was euphoric. I was just absolutely thrilled. Didn't need sleep. My energy levels, which were already high to begin with, went through the roof. My mind was like a laser beam. I could anticipate and solve complex problems rapidly before most people knew there was even a problem to be solved. My brain just stepped up in terms of creativity. And so that was my first rise into actual real mania. And it was a very high performing mania that enhanced my performance. It was probably the best I've ever felt and best I've ever performed in my life.
General Dynamics Land Systems continues to innovate its TRX robotic combat vehicle. TRX's best-in-class modularity has already allowed for successful integration of payloads, from SHORAD to engineering to loitering munitions. Look for TRX at exercises and experiments throughout 2024.
Welcome back to Army Matters. General Martin, before the break, you talked about how you felt like you were Superman in Iraq. But then later you had a hip replacement, kind of the kryptonite. How did that contribute to your bipolarism?
Well, one thing that happened is that my lifelong pursuit of running, long distance running at fast paces that gave me runner's high and a sense of euphoria, that pretty much went away. And so I then started dipping into depression. I would be isolated, confused, indecisive, low energy, didn't want to be around people, which was the exact opposite of how I was most of the time. I would suddenly want to drink alcohol more and more. And then as I drank, my mania would go up higher and higher. I started sort of believing that I was some kind of rock star. And I started like being the life of the party at all the time, whether it was, you know, big parties in my quarters, they were post events, they were with students or what have you. Just an example, there was a new student picnic at the Army War College in 2011. And so we had a nice picnic. It was really good, you know, barbecue and all that. And then afterwards, I went to the tiki bar. And next thing you know, me and a group of special forces officers, we climb over the fence, a locked pool, and we went swimming in the post swimming pool. You know, we're splashing around playing grab ass, and, you know, I'm the leader of the pack.
And you're the commanding general.
Yeah.
I'm the commander. And so finally, a couple of the students said, hey, we better get the hell out of this pool because the MPs drive around all the time and they'd like nothing more than to bust a bunch of officers.
That's right.
You know, that was an example. When I was at Fort Leonard Wood, and Les, I think you were still there, I went to the MP ball.
I was.
Did you see me doing keg stands?
I have no comment.
Okay.
So, I saw a couple, two, three things.
I mean, there were numerous events where I was a wild man. I mean, behavior that was inappropriate. It was stupid. It was really immature and probably would have gotten me relieved if it had gone up to my boss.
Now, it did eventually catch up to you when you were asked to resign by General Dempsey. Can you share with us how that caused you to spiral into complete depression?
One of the things General Dempsey did, you know, for all you commanders out there, he was very compassionate. He could have fired me and relieved me from duty, which would then have had financial implications and, you know, rank implications, but he gave me the chance to resign. I got to retire as a two-star, didn't lose any pay, nothing bad happened. But when I went and got these three psychiatric evaluations and all of them said, you're fine, there's nothing wrong with you, I believed them because they were the doctors. And what that did is it fed into this paranoid delusion that I had that people were out to get me relieved, get me fired, arrested, put in jail. And there actually were kernels of truth to the fact that people at NDU were really opposed to the reforms that General Dempsey and myself were trying to make. They were actually trying to get me fired, a number of people. But they didn't want to get me arrested or put in jail or murdered or anything like that. So when I got the results from the doctors, I said, aha, I was right. Here's proof. They were out to get me. They made up all these lies that I was crazy when I wasn't. And the doctors just confirmed that there was nothing wrong with me. And what I did happen then is my paranoid delusions and my psychosis just spiraled through the roof. And I turned into a state of anger and rage and bitterness. And then I had been in full-blown mania for a period of time. And when you go up with bipolar disorder, and I went way, way up, therefore I went way, way down into depression. And so I crashed into hopeless, crippling depression with terrifying psychosis and entered what I would call 2 years of bipolar hell, where all I wanted to do was to die every day, didn't want to live.
And then you were checked into a VA hospital. Isn't that right?
Here I was, very successful, you know, two-star general, you know, successful combat command, doctorate from MIT, West Point, Army Ranger School. And now all of a sudden, I am an inpatient at a psychiatric ward with the VA, with a bunch of other veterans who have serious psychiatric challenges. And I'm like, you know, talk about going from hero to zero, you know, virtually overnight. And so that's kind of how I thought about that.
So, Greg, how did your family help you with all of that?
I would say my wife, Maggie, who is really the hero, the rock, you know, kind of the rock star of the whole thing. She also informed herself very well by reading, studying, you know, gaining knowledge. But I think her biggest contribution was just a steady, compassionate, caring support ethos where she would help. She didn't nag. A lot of people think when they see somebody with bipolar disorder, especially in the depression stage, they think you just need to change your attitude. Oh, look, the sun is shining. That should make you happy. When the reason you're depressed is not because you're in a bad mood or you're not being grateful. The reason you're depressed is that your brain has decided on its own to underproduce these critical chemicals like dopamine and endorphins. And then when it flips a switch, the brain on its own says, okay, I'm going to produce lots of this stuff. Then you fly up into mania. So Maggie was very good about understanding that this is a physiological illness that takes place inside the cells and the wiring of the brain. And I think that was a really big deal. The other thing Maggie did was she was just steady in taking care of herself. She went to sleep at the same time, got a good night's sleep, got up, walked the dog, would try to get me to go out to walk the dog, and I did sometimes. Then she would, you know, have breakfast and have a very regular pattern of life that included being supportive of me, but not doing everything, because you don't want to baby somebody who has bipolar disorder. You want to help them. And then she was very supportive of when I went into the VA hospital. And, you know, I spent a month and a half living inside the hospital, 2 weeks inpatient, 4 weeks. I lived in a dorm, so I got intensive therapy. And then since we moved to Florida 7.5 years ago, we've kind of together as partners rebuilt our life, a whole new life with new friends, new activities, new location. And she's been very supportive of my new purpose of sharing my bipolar story. And that's big because I spend a ton of time doing talks, podcasts, interviews, et cetera,
yeah,
writing, speaking. And so she's been, you know, really, really good in helping keep both of us healthy.
Let's close this out with one final question. You know, mental health is an issue, a pretty large issue across the military and the Army. What can the Army do to better assist those with things like bipolar disorder or any mental health issues?
Yeah, and your question, any mental health issues, is really good, because mental health challenges, underneath that umbrella comes PTSD, traumatic brain injury, survivor's guilt, moral injury, and other things that all have to do with the wiring of the brain. But what should the military do? I think the things that we should do are, first off, normalize the conversation, educate people, train them. And the training should go all the way from Department of the Army and Department of Defense, you know, down to where the rubber meets the road with the troops. But I think everybody should be informed and be able to identify what are the most common symptoms of these different mental conditions. You know, what do they look like? Like in my case, I was manic for years and years, and I was around thousands of people. Many of them may have thought, hey, there's some, what's up with this guy? You know, he's kind of a weird dude. But nobody knew what the symptoms of mania and bipolar disorder really were, so that they could calibrate in and say, hey, this guy looks like he has bipolar disorder. And I didn't know what they were either. And I felt great most of the time. The second thing I would say is really put teeth and strength in the battle buddy system. Train people. What are their responsibilities and duties with their battle buddy? And one of them should be looking out for the mental well-being of their partner, and be able to talk to them in a non-threatening, encouraging, supportive way and say, hey, Les Smith, I'm seeing some troubling signs here. Let's go to the doctor together. I'll go with you. And let's bring in your spouse and family and some other friends, because that really helps the doctors. If they have what they call collateral information from other people, it really helps them pinpoint a diagnosis, or that there's nothing wrong at all. Most of the time, there is nothing wrong. It's the person's just having a bad day, or they're super excited about something. But you know, the other thing is, people who do have a serious mental illness, they'll say to me, well, I'm worried that if I do get help, it could cost me my career. And my point back is, listen, if you have a serious mental illness, you have two choices. You can either do nothing and probably face a path of destruction, your family, your marriage, your career, your finances, which will then lead to oftentimes homelessness, addiction, incarceration, and death through a violent means or suicide. So if you don't want to do anything, that's a path you're choosing. But on the other hand, even if it does cost you your military career, like my career would have been over with bipolar type 1, but I would rather lose my Army career, but have a life that's purposeful, happy, healthy, where I'm contributing and making a difference, than the path that I laid out first of destruction.
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's great advice, sir.
Yeah.
So we want to thank you for talking with our listeners today and sharing your story. Most importantly, sharing how you overcome adversity and turn something that most would realize would be a downfall in their career to something that was healing.
Thanks so much for sharing that with us. I saw some of the things that you were talking about. And describe for everybody, what's the name of your book? What's the title?
The book is called Bipolar General, My Forever War with Mental Illness.
Okay, great.
You know, it's interesting. I've had a number of medical school professors that are using it in their curriculum already to teach med school classes. And a number of them have said it's the best book they've ever read on mental illness or bipolar disorder. So it's pretty high praise coming from medical professionals.
Especially from a combat engineer, Knuckle Dragon.
Hooah!
Hooah. Yeah, building strong.
Thanks for your service. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan and Les, both of you, for your magnificent, incredible service. So grateful I got to serve with both of you. And, you know, and I appreciate you keeping up the great work, supporting the Army and our, and really our joint force as well.
Well, we enjoy it every day, sir.
We just finished hearing Major General retired Greg Martin discuss some of the highs and lows of his career. And in today's chapter spotlight, AUSA's Fort Liberty chapter, formerly Fort Bragg, teamed with a local organization to reward some of its members for their valued service. On February 15th, the chapter's board of directors, including President Major General Retired Al Acock, attended the first annual 18th Airborne Corps Liberty Ambassador Induction Ceremony. The program was created to select ambassadors from Fort Liberty's surrounding communities who have advanced the quality of life for soldiers and their families. The five Fort Liberty chapter members celebrated were General Retired Dan K. McNeil, Major General Aaron B. Neal, Colonel Retired Willie Wright, Command Sergeant Major Retired Chris Nunez, and Command Sergeant Major Retired Steve England. Each received a certificate and a fashionable maroon blazer. Congrats to the new ambassadors and to the Fort Liberty chapter. If you or your chapter would like to be profiled on the show, please email us at podcast@ausa.org. Hooah!
General Dynamics Land Systems is at the leading edge of artificial intelligence, machine learning, predictive and prognostic maintenance, and software solutions for ground combat vehicles. Our goal is that U.S. soldiers never experience a fair fight. At GDLS, we're in innovation mode. To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Army Matters is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association. Member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission, educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and supporters of a strong national defense. Today's episode was hosted by Lieutenant General Retired Les Smith and SMA Retired Dan Daly, and anchor hosted by Carrie Viral-Heckes. Anthony Del Call is the producer and writer, and Andy Bosnack is the supervising sound editor. Ellen Toner is the content editor. Unzinga Curry is the executive producer, and the senior producers are Carrie Viral-Heckes and LaSharon Duncan. Be sure to subscribe to Army Matters wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave a review. As you know, we love seeing stars in the Army, especially if it comes in the form of a five-star review. AUSA's Army Matters podcast can also be heard on Reach Across America Radio on Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern, on the iHeartRadio app, the Odyssey app, and the TuneIn app with the search of the word REEF. AUSA's Army Matters podcast's primary purpose is to entertain. The podcast does not constitute advice or services. While guests are invited to listen, listeners, please note that you're not being provided professional advice from the podcast or the guest. The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of AUSA. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@ausa.org. I'm LaSharon Duncan. Hope you have a great Army Day. Hooah!